Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
They won 7 games last year. All I'm asking for is 9 or 10 this year. That's not crazy, is it?
Williams.
Comes the Hail Mary with the game on the line, and the ball is caught! Caught! It's a miracle! It's Stella Brown! Oh my goodness!
This one will be paid back over and over again for decades.
Here we go, 46 yards.
You better hurry.
Oh, no.
Oh, this is
game, no.
Disaster in the making here. You're going to have to do something when it comes down to this play. Incomplete, and the game is over. Completely botched at the end by the Bears.
We got to break in real quick with some breaking news that Matt Eberflus has been fired.
Oh, my gosh.
This according to Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network.
Something unpredictable, but in the end is right. At the time of your life.
You're listening to Rami Makhlouf on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Well done, Robbie Triano, on the other side of the glass, really capturing what this season was. The highs of the preseason and having the expectations of 9 or 10 wins, and then all that ensued afterwards. That the sound of the blocked kick against Green Bay literally felt like a gut punch. Like, I heard it in my headphones and my stomach contracted, like somebody just punched me right in the gut. And that's what this season has been like, Bears fans. And I'm with you until 9 o'clock. Jam-packed show. We'll talk with Chuck Swirsky, radio voice of the Bulls, right here on The Score, ahead of Derek Rose night tomorrow at the United Center. He'll join me at 6:20. Hub Arkish, NFL insider at The Score, will talk some Bears with me at 7 o'clock. We'll get the national perspective from Tyler Dunn of GoLongTD.com at 7:20. And my buddy Bart Winkler of the Infinity Sports Network, you hear weeknights right here on The Score. He'll join me at 8:20 right here in studio. But I wanted to ask you this question out of the gates at 312-644-6767, and I'll try to be short with my comments here in this first segment so we can squeeze in a few of you before we get to Chuck Swirsky at 6:20. And you can always drop us a line on the text line, 312-644-6767. And I wanted to revisit something that Kevin Warren said, 4-plus weeks ago now, after the firing of Matt Eberflus, about this Chicago Bears head coaching vacancy and how it would be perceived by the rest of the league. This was Kevin Warren at the press conference announcing Matt Eberflus being fired as the Bears head coach.
And the last item, and we'll continually make progress on them, is that we have an opportunity to build a world-class stadium. So when you look at all of these elements as we sit here today. We are in a unique situation. This will be the most coveted job in the National Football League this year. And Ryan and I need to work hand in hand together to make sure we bring that to life, not only from a head coach standpoint, but also from an entire staff standpoint.
The most coveted job in the NFL this year, as far as head coach openings, Kevin Warren said. And when he said it, at the time, I think a lot of us, and again, this is not an exoneration of Matt Eberflus. He was a bad coach, and you heard the 32 seconds that proves it in the open that Robbie produced right there. Right? So this isn't a defense of Matt Eberflus. But when he said that, we were putting a lot of this on Matt Eberflus. And when he said that, we were like, yeah. Yeah, this should be a pretty coveted head coaching job. But they haven't done a damn thing but lose since. And as far as that stadium goes, Kevin Warren, still not a shovel in the ground or a crane in the sky. All right, so calm it down a little bit as far as the selling point that is. But how attractive is this Bears head coach job really? Now that we've had some time to see this team and with no Matt Eberflus to blame. And where this conversation has gone around the Chicago Bears since then. How coveted, how attractive is this Bears head coach job really? 312-644-6767. And the thing that got me thinking about it was I was reading, they did a profile on Mike Vrabel in The Athletic today. And I'm going to give you more of it later. Really interesting. In depth, they spent a lot of time with Mike Vrabel, man. And I'll give you some of the highlights a little later in the show. But it was this quote from Mike Vrabel that got me wondering about this question. How attractive, how coveted is this Bears head coach job really? And here's what Vrabel said about what he wants in his next job. There's got to be clear communication with ownership so that we understand as coaches what the expectations are. That's so we can explain to them what's reasonable, what we can do, what we probably can do, and what we're going to try to do or die trying. I want to have a structure in place that people see the game the same way I do from an X's and O's standpoint, from a personnel standpoint, with team building. We hopefully would have that alignment, which is crucial. And I would like to be able to say that there is a quarterback that you feel like you can win with, or that there is a path to find the one that you can win with. Let's break that down. Let's break that down point by point. And let's take this along with the fact that yesterday, as I was reading about, and I said this on the air, Cliff Kingsbury and him wanting to get back into head coaching, and ESPN reporting that he was going to be, quote-unquote, selective about where he ended up. Same thing that we've heard about Ben Johnson, that he was going to be selective about where he ended up. And now Mike Vrabel telling you there are certain things I want in this next job, and I'm not just going to go anywhere. And I said yesterday, the Bears are going to have to sell these guys on the job as much as they're going to have to sell the Bears on the fact that they're the person for the job. So with that in mind, let's go point by point on what Mike Vrabel, and probably what these other guys, this is the first time somebody has voiced it, what they're looking for in this next head coaching job. These guys who are at the top of the list of a lot of teams, and we're hearing are going to be selective about where they go. There's got to be clear communication with ownership so that we understand as coaches what the expectations are. Does anything about the Bears and the McCaskies scream clear communication to you? Anything? Anyone? 312-644-6767. What do you think of the Chicago Bears? And you think of the McCaskies? Do you think of clear communication, like a well-functioning, well-oiled machine, just a good organization with communication from top to bottom and nothing getting crossed anywhere in between? He goes on to say that so we can explain to them what's reasonable, what we can do, what we probably can do, and what we're going to try to do or die trying. I want to have a structure in place that people see the game the same way I do from an X's and O's standpoint, from a personnel standpoint, with team building. We hopefully would have that alignment, which is critical. That word alignment brings us to our guy, Ryan Poles. Talked about this yesterday. Ryan Poles' roster is not so good. for everybody who will sit there and tell you, well, yeah, I mean, you've messed up with Eberflus and maybe made a few mistakes, but this roster is good, or this roster is better. Good rosters don't lose 11 in a row. Good rosters don't stay in the basement of their division for 4 years at every positional group that runs out there onto the field. Good rosters don't have one Pro Bowler who is not drafted by the current GM. Good rosters don't let three Pro Bowlers walk or trade them because you thought they couldn't be part of a winning team or a winning culture. That's not what good rosters do. And when you talk about alignment, Ryan Poles is in a not-so-good and uncertain situation. And pretty soon, I think the Bears are faced with the decision of, do we fire this guy? Do we keep this guy as sort of a lame duck GM? Or do we give him an extension, despite what I just said about the roster and him hiring and keeping Matt Eberflus? And no matter which one of those you do, you're either joining a GM who has put together a roster that's about to lose 11 in a row, or you're joining a GM who might be out the door in a year, and now you're going to be answering to somebody else, and you don't really have that alignment that Mike Vrabel is talking about. And then the last thing he says, and I would like to be able to say that there's a quarterback that you feel like you can win with, or that there's a path to find the one that you can win with. And this is the part that's going to hurt some folks' feelings. And I want you to know I'm on your side. There's two camps when it comes to Caleb Williams right now. There's the camp that says the Bears are just doing what they do to quarterbacks. And that's why Caleb Williams is having the struggles that he's having. And then there's the camp that says maybe this guy was not as good as was advertised coming out in the draft. I tend to lean towards the former and not the latter. But I can see why someone, including a Mike Vrabel or a Ben Johnson or a Cliff Kingsbury, who are going to be selective about where they go to be a head coach, and the quarterback is going to factor into that, I could understand somebody making the argument to the contrary, that maybe Caleb Williams is not that dude. I can see both sides of the argument. There's a chart that's making its way around the Twitters today, and I'll do my best to describe this. I'll retweet it as well, at Rami is tweeting, so you can see it. It's one of those X-axis charts. Robbie, do you know what I mean? Did you see the chart? Do you know what I mean? Okay. And on the left side is catchable throw rate. Throws they've made that their receivers should catch. On the bottom axis is pressure to sack rate, how often they are sacked when they are pressured. And that was a number that Clay Harbor brought up on the show yesterday and said Caleb Williams is by far the worst in that category. He's getting sacked almost 40% of the time, well, 35% of the time that he gets pressured. For some perspective, the next closest guy, Russell Wilson, under 30%. The best in that category, Jordan Love and Josh Allen, they get sacked about 5% of the time that they get pressured.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. It's not good.
It's not good.
It's not a good graph at
all. He's way down at the bottom left-hand corner. And as far as catchable throw rate, he's below 60%. And just for perspective, the best in that category is Joe Burrow, who's above 80%. Guys in the top right-hand corner who are good in both these categories, avoiding the sack when they're pressured and throwing catchable balls, Justin Herbert, Dak Prescott, Patrick Mahomes. But Caleb Williams, all by himself, down in the bottom left-hand corner of this chart. And there are people, hell, Caleb Williams himself, have said that a lot of the sacks this year have been on him. And if you're a head coach, maybe you believe that's a product of the environment that he's been put in. Maybe you believe it's something that you can coach out of him. Or maybe you think this guy is just not the guy. And so you don't really want this job. So again, clear communication with ownership, alignment in terms of team building and personnel, and a quarterback that you feel like you can win with. That those were the three things that Mike Vrabel laid out as things he wants in his next job. And Mike Vrabel, along with Ben Johnson and Cliff Kingsbury, are guys that are going to be selective, we've heard, about where they go to coach next. Is this Bears job that attractive, really? That coveted, as Kevin Warren said it was 4 weeks ago, now that we've seen what they are? 312-644-6767. Let's go to Robert, who's in Wisconsin. Now he's on the score. What's up, Robert?
Hey, Rami, I was telling the producer, I said, who's in charge of the Bears? That's the biggest question. And as this thing with Eberflus has gone on, it seems more and more that Kevin Warren has kind of done what a lot of people hoped he was going to do when he first got the job, which was kind of take over everything. Because if I recall, George didn't want Eberflus fired, but they fired him. And then Kevin said, me and Poles are going to make sure we get this right.
Yes.
So it seems like it took a year, but Kevin Warren has finally taken control of the Chicago Bears.
That's what it looks like, and that's certainly what it looked like in that press conference as Ryan Poles sat there silently for 8.5 minutes and just watched Kevin Warren with big sitting with dad in the principal's office energy. It looked like Kevin Warren was in charge. He said all the right things that, you know, Ryan Poles is a general manager. He's going to be the point man on this search. But the words weren't really matching the body language and what we were seeing and hearing up there at the podium. And it, again, does raise that question of who's in charge. I don't know. And that report that George McCaskey didn't want to fire Matt Eberflus, I've heard reports to the opposite, to the contrary. So I don't know. I don't mind saying that into a microphone. I don't know. And I know those aren't words, but I don't know. And that's part of the problem when I talk about that clear communication and the alignment. What is the communication? What's the pecking order? What's the chain of command? How do we align? Is this GM going to be here next year? Is that quarterback really as good as was advertised a year ago? These are things that coaches are going to be looking at, coaches that are going to be sought after, that are going to be coveted, to use Kevin Warren's language. And I don't know that the Bears are as coveted or as attractive as Kevin Warren said that day, thought that day, or as maybe we all thought that day. My opinion can change in 5 weeks. And it has. It has. I thought a lot of this was Eberflus, man. And we're finding out it still was, but there's also a lot of problems beyond Matt Eberflus with this football team on the field and off. We can bring this back later. How attractive, how coveted is this Bears coaching job? Really, you can always drop me a line on the text line at 312-644-6767. Switch some gears, talk some Bulls. It's Derek Rose night at the United Center tomorrow. We'll talk about it with the radio voice of the Bulls right here on The Score, Chuck Swirsky. He joins me, Rami Makhlouf, next on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Lead pass, whoa!
Oh, stop it! Stop it! Did not do him like that! What are you doing, Dragic? Did you not get the memo? Derrick Rose can go upstairs!
Woo! Put him in the Hall of Fame! Put him in the Hall!
Rami Makhlouf with you on a Friday night right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. It is Derrick Rose night tomorrow at the United Center as they welcome the Knicks. And joining me now on The Score hotline, presented by Circus Sports Illinois, is the radio voice of those Bulls right here on 670, The Score in the Bulls Radio Network, Chuck Swirsky. And this segment with Chuck is brought to you by Great Lakes Credit Union. Join GLCU in banking for a greater good. Visit glcu.org for details. Chuck, how are you this evening, my friend?
Good, Rami. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm looking right now at your Twitter timeline and you putting it out there. You're going to interview Derrick Rose on the pregame show tomorrow right here on The Score. Starts at 6:45. You got a nice picture of the two of you. And I don't know when this picture was taken, Chuck, but neither of you have aged a day, sir. You both are doing looking great.
Well, I don't know about that, but I'm really excited for Derrick. You know, this has been a tremendous week. He's been in Chicago. I know he spends so much time here. I don't know where he lives now, whether it's someone in Chicago or other places, but the fact he's back home and the fact that the city has embraced him as they have from day one is just awesome.
And I saw that you said in the tweet, you and Bill called every one of his 447 Bulls games on the Bulls radio network. Got to be the most explosive player you ever covered. You didn't know what that guy was going to do from anywhere on the court at any given point. It was amazing to watch when he was in his prime.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I had the pleasure of coming into the NBA Vince Carter's rookie year with the Raptors. And I mean, that was
pretty close,
spectacular.
Yeah.
and then I saw the maturation of Tracy McGrady in years two and three. I was not there for his rookie year. But, I mean, with Derrick, I would say, with all due respect to other point guards who have played this game, and there have been Hall of Fame-worthy point guards, obviously, Chicago's, you know, Isaiah Thomas, Allen Iverson. I mean, we could go down the list of great point guards in the 60s and 70s. But the truth of the matter is nobody brought in the toolbox. He had it all. I mean, Derrick, his power, his finesse, his strength to the rim, the way he played through contact, his uncanny ability to get his shot off, his teardrops, his mid-range, his three. I mean, we could go right down the list. I mean, he was an incredible, incredible talent.
And I saw a quote from Doc Rivers the other day. The Bucks head coach said that MVP season of his, the best season he's ever seen from a small guard. Would you go that far, Chuck, to say the best season you've ever seen from a small guard?
I would agree with Doc 100%. Yeah, I mean, MVP season was amazing. As you know, I mean, the Bulls won 62 games that year, and they lost to Miami in the Eastern Conference Finals. And, I mean, we could play the, well, if game, you know, for from now until the end of time. But I'm convinced that Derrick stayed healthy, they would have gone to the finals once, maybe twice in that window, because it's really hard to get back. And only a few teams can do that, like the Bulls or Golden State or whatever. But the truth of the matter is that this was Derrick Rose's team, and he had great players with him. I mean, and tomorrow you're going to see these players and his teammates at the United Center, whether it was Joakim Noah, whether it was Luol Deng, whether it's Kirk Heinrich, I mean, on and on and on, Taj Gibson. I mean, that team that was assembled, that John Paxson and Gar Foreman put together around Derrick was an amazing, amazing unit.
Talking with Chuck Swirsky, radio voice of the Bulls. And you can hear that game tomorrow, Bulls-Knicks and Derrick Rose night, including Derrick Rose joining Chuck on the pregame show, which starts at 6:45 right here on The Score. And, Chuck, a lot swirled around Derrick Rose here in Chicago during his exit and in the years leading up to it. I always go back to, and you just talked about those teammates, I always go back to what his coaches and his teammates say about him. And to a man, they defend him furiously. It's not just the lip service that you'll get from teammates and coaches who don't want to stir the pot in the media. They really go to bat for Derrick Rose, especially Joakim Noah, who gets emotional when he talks about the guy. To me, that's what really tells you what kind of teammate Derrick Rose is, how committed he was to the game of basketball and to the Bulls as an organization.
No doubt about it. I mean, Derrick is so well respected within that locker room with the Bulls and with the organization. And just personally speaking, the way he has embraced, you know, all of us in the media, he never ducked. He was always very forthright and even through difficult times. And so, you know, I mean, I look at his career and the way he bounced back after, you know, ACL, MCL, nagging injuries. And after the Bulls, you know, he went from New York and he was with Cleveland and, you know, Minnesota and Detroit and whatnot. But I mean, when it was all said and done, I mean, Derek was a fantastic, fantastic talent.
I know this is asking a lot, and you've seen a lot of basketball. You've done a lot of radio play-by-play in the NBA. Is there one Derrick Rose moment, or what? Maybe your favorite call of a Derrick Rose moment on the court that stands out to you, Chuck?
Wow. Well, I mean,
I know.
The clip you play with Stacey, obviously, and
yeah.
Bill and I were in Phoenix when that Goran Dragic got posterized by yeah. Derrick. I mean, that was a signature moment. I don't think there's any question about that, but. You know, the truth of the matter is that there were so many. The playoff game where he hit the shot over Tristan Thompson. I mean, we could go right down the list. The playoff series, his first playoff series in game one in Boston in 2009, where he was taking on a veteran in Rajon Rondo. And, I mean, it was a unbelievable game. I mean, one of the finest NBA games I've ever seen. And I mean, but the volume of work that Derek put through was essentially, you know, some of the finest individual craft of an NBA player I've ever seen.
Talking with Chuck Swirsky, voice of the Chicago Bulls here on The Score. Catch Bulls Knicks tomorrow. Chuck talks with Derrick Rose on the pregame show starting at 6:45. There now is a as you said, nothing but love, it seems, for Derrick Rose and his return. But there is some debate as to whether the number one should hang from the rafters. Earlier this week, our very own Dan Bernstein said that he doesn't think D. Rose should have his number retired. He points to greats like Artis Gilmore, who didn't have their number retired. And there is only four jerseys hanging up there in the United Center rafters. Where do you fall when it comes to D. Rose and the retirement of his jersey, Chuck?
Well, you know what? Here's my take on retired jerseys.
Mm-hmm.
I think what the Bulls have done with the Ring of Honor is awesome. And I get the retired jersey. I think, obviously, Derek came out today and said he would like that jersey retired, and I think that's a decision that ownership will make, and management, and the Reinsdorf family. So I will let other people with pay grade and way above me to handle that. But I do think that what the Bulls are doing with the Ring of Honor is awesome, and I would think that you get in a situation where you start saying, well, if he has his jersey retired, what about other jerseys and other players that made an impact?
Right.
But, you know, Derrick Rose was the youngest MVP in the history of the sport at 22. And, I mean, he has left an indelible mark on this city because he is a Chicagoan. So we'll see what happens. I mean, right now I'm just going to celebrate tomorrow and go from there.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go. Just spend the time to celebrate the guy and everything that he did in Chicago. I do want to talk to you about the current Bulls, the ones that will run out there onto the court tomorrow after all the ceremonies to celebrate Derrick Rose. I got to say, I've been surprised by Josh Giddey. I didn't love the move when they made it, Chuck. He's shown some flashes, though, and on any given night, he seems like a triple-double threat. Also, though, a defensive liability, as you could probably say about a number of the guys on this roster right now. How do you feel about Josh Giddey's first season here in Chicago?
I would say that I think that he is who he is from the standpoint that I knew he was going to be able to contribute on the offensive side. I think he has a sincere interest, and he has taken Billy Donovan's word to heart about defense. I mean, I don't think that he's going to make all defensive team, but what I've seen out of Josh is that he is a willing participant to play defense, and he wants to get better. So from that standpoint, I'm very encouraged that he hasn't mailed it in on the defensive side. He does give effort. Having said that, on the offensive side, I think they're getting everything they wanted to get out of him. His assists are up. He's rebounding the ball. I don't think he'll ever be in a three-point shooting contest, but I do think that he's very crafty with the ball when he turns the corner, especially on the right side of the floor with the right-hand dribble drive. So I like it from the standpoint that I do think he has a mentality of including other four players on the floor and that he can distribute the ball And so I think what the return from the trade for Caruso has been good. And I think he's going to be better. I mean, you still look at his age. He's still a very young man.
I was just going to say that, Chuck. I think people forget, and because he's been in the league for a couple of years now and came with a little bit of hype when he came out in the draft. I guess I kind of forget. We're talking about a 22-year-old guy. He wouldn't be the first NBA player to sort of start to figure out the NBA later than the age of 22. This can take some time.
Well, as he grows into his NBA moxie, so to speak, and understands just how good he can become, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that he is an elite passer in this league, period. His vision, his inbounding on after timeout plays, dead ball situations, superb. One of the best in the league. And as I mentioned, I think he's starting to learn about his offensive game, and especially with a coach like Billy Donovan, I think will help him on the defensive side. So, you know, for where the Bulls are at and they are loaded at guard, I think he's a player that at least you can have in your stable moving forward if they elect to do that.
All-star voting will end in a couple of weeks, January 20th. If there's one guy on this roster who's earned at least some consideration for the all-star roster, it's probably Nikolai Vucevic. 20-plus points a game, 10-plus rebounds a game, shooting 44% from three-point land. Do you think he gets some consideration when they start putting that roster together? However they're doing it this year, Chuck, I'm not sure I entirely understand how they're doing it this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're doing it. They're really throwing a bone to TNT. They're going to do the All-Star game, and Kenny and Shaq and Charles are going to pick the teams, and then they're going to take the winning team from the Rising Star. That'll be the fourth team. So then they're going to have a round-robin playoff, and that's how they'll do that. But regarding Vooch, I mean, he is having an All-Star season. In all-star basketball, they really don't pick bigs anymore because the way the game is going. But, you know, if anyone deserves to go from the Bulls, it would be Vooch. No doubt about that.
You know, we started this conversation talking about Derrick Rose, and again, he'll be honored tomorrow, Derrick Rose night, at the United Center. You can hear it as the Bulls take on the Knicks, 6:45 pregame, including Chuck's conversation with Derrick Rose in that pregame show. Another ex-Bull and one of Derrick Rose's teammates in the NBA news today, Chuck, and that's Jimmy Butler, who has said some interesting things today about how he's not having fun playing the game and has informed the Heat that he wants out. This literally just happened before I brought you on, so I'm not sure if you saw it. The Heat have suspended him for 7 games for those controversial comments. Who is the Jimmy Butler that you remember? Because he certainly, everywhere he goes eventually, seems to have some kind of controversy swirling around him, Chuck.
Well, you know what? The Jimmy Butler that I know, I don't know what happened in Minnesota and Philadelphia and Miami, but, you know, the Jimmy Butler was a very young man, as you know, when he was drafted 30th overall, and he went to the Bulls, and he really didn't play much because he was behind Luol Deng, and he was coming off the bench his rookie year, didn't play a lot, and then when Deng got hurt, Tom Thibodeau gave him the keys to the car and said, you know what, you're my defensive wing stopper. And, I mean, to me, I mean, I've always gotten along with Jimmy. We have a good relationship, obviously. I mean, I don't see him much anymore.
Right.
With the exception of, hello, how are you? You do it good. One of those things, the last 12 seconds. So I haven't spent a lot of time with him lately. I kind of saw this happening because the contract situation and the fact that Miami didn't pick it up, or the fact that Miami, in a sense, didn't extend him, rather, because he has a player option for next year. But when Miami kind of pumped the brakes a little bit on that, I think Jimmy probably said, you know, am I wanted here? And Jimmy is a very proud man. He's also a very sensitive individual. And I think that this was going to be combustible. And one thing is, you don't cross Pat Riley. Pat Riley in a room, well, when you come out of that room, you will not win. And so Pat Riley, you know, playing poker, and he called the card and he suspended him.
Yeah, that's what I said to my producer, Robbie, during the break when he told me that news. I was like, man, Pat Riley does not play. Like, these guys who have forced their way out of other situations, whether it's Dame in Portland or other James Harden in Houston, that wasn't Pat Riley that those guys were, as you put it, Chuck, sitting at the poker table with. And he will call your card every time, I think. I don't think he's going to bend to Jimmy Butler's will. That is the voice of the Chicago Bulls. Catch him on 670 The Score. Derrick Rose night tomorrow. Pregame starts at 6:45, and Chuck sits down with Derrick Rose. I'm sure it'll be posted later at CTS Bulls on Twitter, where you can follow Chuck. Always appreciate the time and the insight, sir. Always a pleasure.
Robbie, thank you so much. Have a great night. Thank you.
And Chuck joins me on the Score Hotline, presented by Circus Sports Illinois. And again, Chuck is brought to you by Great Lakes Credit Union. Join GLCU in banking for a greater good. Visit glcu.org for details. Pat Riley does not play, man. I'm telling you. This isn't Houston. This isn't Portland, where you're gonna make a fuss and force your way out. No, Pat Riley will play that poker game with you. Are you a local business owner or employee? How would you like to have your commercial air during Super Bowl 59 right here on The Score? This is your chance. We've brought back Score Big for your business, where you can enter to win a 30-second Super Bowl commercial on The Score's broadcast of Super Bowl 59 from Westwood One. Log on to 670thescore.com/contest to enter now and learn more details. Deadline to enter is January 19th. Again, that's 670thescore.com/contest. You interested in Mike Vrabel as the next head coach of the Bears? We know more about him. A lot more about him. An extensive piece on Mike Vrabel dropped today. I'll bring you some of the highlights right after this. Robbie Maklouf with you. It's the Score Evening Show right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
It sucks to lose, Gentry. Did you have another thought or no? I'm just curious. It sucks. Losing. Awful. That's why I want to win. Because you don't sleep. You want to win for the players that bust their tail. That's it.
We're back live with more Rami Maklouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
An emotional Mike Vrabel in his final season as the Titans head coach. I am Rami Maklouf with you until 9 o'clock. Hub Arkish joins me at 7, our NFL insider here at The Score. Also, Tyler Dunn of GoLongTD.com joins me in that 7 o'clock hour, 7:20 to be exact. Any interest in Mike Vrabel? Also, we got a few minutes here. I could probably squeeze in a call or two. We can go back to the conversation I started the show with. How attractive is this Bears head coach job, really? 312-644-6767. And it was an article, a profile of Mike Vrabel in The Athletic today that kind of got the wheels turning in terms of what he said he wanted in the next job. And I can read that for you again in just a second. But man, it was this in-depth. I don't know how much time they said in the article, they say they spent a lot of time with Mike Vrabel, but they didn't say exactly how much. They spent a lot of time with Mike Vrabel. And I got to say, the article paints him as a very likable guy. They tell a story about when he was fired in Tennessee and he gathered all his coaches and just off the cuff, no script, no nothing. He went around the room and had a story about every guy and their families. And it was a touching, like, heartfelt thing that he had this type of connection with all his coaches. Approachable type of guy who really loves football and the attention that comes with it, like, really likes it. They in both Ohio, where he's living now and where he's lived for a long time, and in Nashville, he's got himself a corner bar with a corner booth at both that are set aside for him. And I don't remember which one it was, but one of them above his booth, they have his jersey. Well, no, it has to be in Ohio, because they said it was his Ohio State jersey. They have his jersey hanging above the booth that he sits in every time, and everybody knows who he is, and people come over and ask for a picture, and he's always happy to take the picture, and Titans fans always have really nice things to say about him, and he loves Titans fans. Like, he really soaks that stuff up, man. And as I was reading this, I was like, this dude, if he had any success in Chicago, might just get swept away with all the love and attention that he's getting. Because if he's that wrapped up in it in Tennessee and in Ohio, man, just wait till Bears fans get a hold of him if he has any success as a Bears head coach. And really, and this shouldn't surprise anybody, a real football guy. Mike Vrabel is a real, like, football guy. He says in there, I've had three jobs. I played football, I coached football, and I've been a consultant in football, which is what he's doing for the Cleveland Browns. He's putting on the blocking pads and the red jersey in Browns practice, mixing it up with guys. He worked with tight ends. He worked with offensive linemen. He's worked with the scouting department, the general manager's office. He's just gone around that organization because he says he wants to, like, learn as much about a football organization as he can in this sort of off year that he's got and this time that he's got with the Browns. And I respect that, man. I respect that he's taken the opportunity to really learn and open to the idea that he can learn, even having a lifetime in football. Here's just a couple of highlights from the article. This one is just, this tells you the type of dude that Mike Vrabel is. All right. In late August, Vrabel walked up to his favorite diner in Nashville, two cups of Starbucks in hand, one a quad espresso for himself, that's nuts, and the other for the journalist spending the day with him. Vrabel wakes up at 4:30 most mornings to work out, and as far as he's concerned, diner coffee won't get him through the day. When he was informed outside beverages weren't allowed, he chugged his cup, tossed the other, and made his way to a corner booth. That's a dude right there. I can't bring in my quad espresso? All right. I'll just chug it.
I'm surprised his, like, heart hasn't exploded. Like, 'cause my guess is it's probably not the first time he's done that. He probably does that every day.
That's insane. That's absolutely insane. But that's, you want a little insane in a football coach, don't you? That tells you a little something about Mike Vrabel. His coaching style, they talk about his time there and he built his coaching style around week-to-week adaptability and attention to the smallest details. There were teach tape meetings, a look at how penalties were called, mistakes were made by other teams on Friday, and officiating crew deep dives on Saturday. He would always say going into games, I want you physically and mentally exhausted by the end of the week by how hard we worked in practice and how much we put into the game plan, former Titan center Ben Jones said, and I would be absolutely brain dead by Sunday. Every week, Vrabel identified three keys to victory, emphasizing specific statistical targets. For instance, turnover differential, total rushing attempts, points allowed, depending on the opponent. Jones estimated that if the Titans hit their three keys, they won 90% of the time. It's pretty good. I kind of like that. That's, if the Bears had that, I don't think they'd get off to the slow starts that they've gotten off to so far this year. Because all that goes back to preparation and attention to detail and being ready to go coming out of the gates. On the notion that he's hard to work with, that's one of the things that swirled around about him and as he looks for another coaching job. He says, quote, I care about the team. No job is too small for me or anybody else to help the team win. I feel like I can work with anybody. I feel like winning is the ultimate goal, and I, just like our team, have got to be willing to adjust and adapt to things that are going on, but I believe that I can respectfully disagree, have a conversation, and move on and get past it. I'm also not afraid to share my opinion and what I believe in, my convictions about things that relate to helping a football team win, building a team, or helping players, helping scouts. I love when coaches and scouts get together post-draft. I love collaborating with the general manager on inactives on game day. I tried to incorporate that system into Tennessee because it's something that I embraced and loved about what we did in Houston. It's a unique relationship, coach and GM, one that has to remain respectful at all times. I think that it always was. Are we going to disagree? Yeah. I hope that we do so that we can grow, but ultimately, somebody's got to be in charge. That sounds like that's somebody he thinks should be him. Doesn't that sound like that? Like, I'm going to disagree with you, and I'm not going to take it personally, and we're going to move on. But at the end of the day, somebody's got to be in charge. You don't usually say that unless you think you're the person who should be in charge. You don't usually say somebody's got to be in charge unless you're talking about you. And again, this goes back to Ryan Poles and how he may be an obstacle or a hurdle in hiring the coach that they want or need, because I think Ryan Poles wants to be in charge. I also think Kevin Warren is going to get involved in player decisions and personnel decisions, but he wants to be in charge to some degree. So that to me, and again, I don't mind the stuff about disagreeing, being passionate about it, having his convictions. That's fine as long as you can do that in a healthy way. I was driving in listening to Spiegel and Holmes with Layla Rahimi sitting in today, and they played a clip from Thomas Brown saying he doesn't shy away from confrontation, that he thinks it's healthy and makes people uncomfortable, but makes them grow and makes them better. And I agree with that. I don't mind that. But those last couple of sentences, it's a unique relationship, coach and GM, one that has to remain respectful. I think it always was. Are we going to disagree? Yeah, I hope that we do so that we can grow. But ultimately, somebody's got to be in charge. And it sounds like he's both talking about his end in Tennessee, but also what he wants in the next job. And I don't know that he can necessarily, if he's that somebody, as I suspect he is in his mind, I don't know that he can necessarily get along with Ryan Poles, who wants to be pulling the strings. And I'll just read this one more time real quick. I read this at the top of the show, and it made me wonder if Vrabel or any other desirable head coach, sought-after head coach, would really want this Bears job and how attractive it is to them. He says there's got to be clear communication with ownership so that we understand as coaches what the expectations are, and so we can explain to them what's reasonable, what we can do, what we probably can do, and what we're going to try to do or die trying. I want to have structure in place that people see this game the same way I do from an X's and O's standpoint, from a personnel standpoint, with team building. We could hopefully have that alignment, which is critical. And I would like to be able to say that there's a quarterback that you feel like you can win with, or that there's a path to find the one that you can win with. And as I said at the start of the show, that does not bode well for the Bears. If this is what Mike Vrabel and Cliff Kingsbury and Ben Johnson are looking for, if they're being selective in their next job, communication with ownership, alignment with the management and the personnel people, not there. And I think some would debate whether or not that quarterback is there. But now we know a whole lot more about Mike Vrabel. I'd recommend the article if you have that Athletic subscription. 312-644-6767. If you want to drop me a text, give me your thoughts on Mike Vrabel. Here's one. Vrabel has been on the record as saying the previous GM with the Titans got him fired because he traded guys like A.J. Brown. I do remember that. There was some friction there. And this from the 414. If the Athletic did the same puff piece on every other candidate, you would feel exactly the same about each of those guys. And that's true. The article was designed to paint him in a positive light. And I'm aware of that. I'm not a dummy. I get it. We'll hit a quick break. Also not a dummy. Very smart man. Covers the Bears for us here at The Score. Hub Arkish, our NFL insider. He'll join me, Rami Makhlouf. It's The Score Evening Show right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score.